We've been talking a little bit about the honors, and with those honors, the responsibilities that belong to us as Christians. We want to establish a culture that leads to growth in this place. That's our goal. We want to grow. That, of course, means that we're going to grow individually. It means that we're going to grow as a group, and we're going to help each other to do that. As we've thought about the honor and responsibility that's involved in being that kind of person, one of the things that we have to think about is the honor of being involved in evangelism. Evangelism is really just telling people the good news. You know, Jesus chose 12 people to be his spokesman. And when he chose those 12, I can't imagine what a great honor that was. Why would he have chosen a man like Matthew? Now, he's not an educated man. He's not a great, powerful man. He's a tax collector. Why would Jesus choose people like that to be his spokesman? But he did. And that means a lot to me. Evangelism is a word that's used in the New Testament in reality quite a bit in conversations about New Testament Christians. Webster defines evangelize this way. He says it's getting one to convert to Christianity or simply to preach the gospel. And that's a marvelous approach, I think. Our goal is to bring people to know Christ. But when you think about it, our goal is really just to speak the good news, to let people know about what Jesus has done, what he's done in our life, and what he will do in their life. Now, Webster goes on, and he does something that I think is unfortunate, because he defines an evangelist as what he calls a revivalist. That's a really old word. That's not one that we use. That comes from an old concept in American society. They used to have great tent meetings, and they would call them revivals. And people would come from miles around, and they would come to hear these great preachers preach. And that was pretty impressive. And now we've kind of replaced those big tent meetings or revivals with major multimedia events where a great preacher preaches to thousands of people that have gathered in Yankee Stadium. I remember seeing Billy Graham preach to throngs of people in Yankee Stadium, and that must have been a moving scene. But Webster kind of focuses on that kind of evangelism. He says an evangelist is a revivalist or a preacher who holds large public services in various cities, now specifically on the television. I think that misses the real concept of what it means to be a teacher. So I'll just put the question out there. Is an evangelist, and in that group I would probably include myself, is the evangelist, the preacher, the minister, the only person who's responsible for spreading the gospel? How would you answer that question? Carol's shaking her head no. Her head's going to fall off her shoulders.
Let somebody else have a try. But, you know, evangelizing is to spread the gospel, and that means you're sharing them with anybody who's listening.
Right.
That means every person who can repeat what they were told about what Jesus and the apostles said has the opportunity to be able to be an evangelist.
Okay.
Or to evangelize.
Okay. Or to evangelize. Anybody else? What do you think? Yeah, Bill.
In the early days when the Christians were driven out of Rome, I believe it was, or Jerusalem, they went all over the world, the known world then, and that was how the word spread. It spread like wildfire because of all those people who were dispersed.
Okay.
They weren't all evangelists. They were just people like you and me.
Well, if you look at the record, the apostles were the ones that stayed in Jerusalem. That would be the big televangelists, okay? That's Peter standing up on Pentecost, and he gets this great crowd. That's Webster's evangelist. Do you know who preached the first gospel sermon outside of the city of Jerusalem? Regular old folks. The apostles were still in Jerusalem. But like Bill said, the gospel starts to spread. And it's regular people. And I must say, it was regular people who talked about what had happened. You know, I think we're being a little bit lazy when we say, I just need to live the gospel and let people see what I'm doing. No, I don't think anybody's ever been converted just by watching the way that people live. I think the way people live is important. Don't get me wrong, but I think you have to say something too. This idea that, you know, you really don't need to say anything, you just need to live it. I think that's a dangerous, lazy approach. Yeah, Bill.
Do you know what the answer to that question is?
The first person who preached outside of Jerusalem?
Yeah.
I know it wasn't an apostle. That's the only thing I can say. It wasn't an apostle because the apostles were still there. Now, the first recorded sermon that's preached outside of the city of Jerusalem is Philip. He went up to Samaria and he started preaching. Now, he wasn't an apostle. He was a deacon or one of the men that was chosen to help with the ministering to the widows there in Jerusalem. But beyond that, I can't say. But I know it wasn't an apostle. And we think, wow, look at what Billy Graham does or, you know, some big televangelist and how he gets thousands of people. That's not the way the gospel spreads. Yeah, Kim.
I was just reflecting on a study that I recently did, and I was thinking about Paul talking to his son in the faith, Timothy, his protege, right? And in 2 Timothy 4, he tells him, I give you this charge, preach the word, be prepared in season, out of season, correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction. And then he tells him the time's going to come when people aren't going to listen to this, and there are big crowds. And they're going to want to listen to somebody talk to a big crowd. But what they want were their ears to be tickled, to hear the, I call it the warm, fuzzy part of Christianity, right? And they don't want to be held accountable. They don't want to hear the hard stuff. And he said, but you, keep your head in all situations. Endure hardship. Do the work of an evangelist. Discharge all the duties of your ministry. And this is at the end of Paul's life, and he's passing this responsibility on to the person that he calls his son in the faith. So this is his protege. And I think that is when Jesus told the apostles to go out from Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the earth, that's the way they were going to do it, is to kind of get proteges or get people who could help carry the gospel. They were going to live forever. So this charge that Jesus gave them is actually, through the generations, the same charge that he gives to us. And I think that it's, and Paul just said it so eloquently to Timothy. Timothy, here's what I'm charging you to do. I'm at the end of my life. and I need you to keep moving this forward. This, if for lack of a better word, the Jesus Christ, the mission of Jesus Christ. You need to keep moving this forward. And I think when we start to adopt that philosophy, that our mission is to carry forth the mission of Jesus Christ, because Jesus gave it to the apostles to keep spreading and spreading and spreading. There's only 12 men. The only way they could do that was to leave Jerusalem. And to, they had to give it to other people to move forward. Okay. And if we don't take it forward, it's not going to go forward.
Okay. Now, in terms of 2 Timothy 2 at verse 5, I think it's important that we keep in mind what Paul is telling Timothy. Okay? He's saying, you be sober in all things, suffer hardship, do the work of an evangelist. But let's not skip to what I call cultural Christianity. And cultural Christianity is not paying attention to what the Bible really says. It's kind of, pay a little bit of attention to it. But we're really not paying attention to it. Look at the statement that James makes in James 3 at verse 1. He says, be not many of you teachers, my brethren, knowing that we shall receive a harsher or a heavier judgment. So, while I absolutely agree with Kim, there's this caution that James gives. Be not many teachers. King James Version says masters. And that's a good word. There's nothing wrong with the idea of a master. But the real crux of that idea is a teacher. Be careful if you're going to teach. Now, this is what Paul told Timothy, 2 Timothy 2, verse 2. He says, the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men. And I don't think that word men there is restricted to the male gender. I think he's saying, commit that to faithful people who will be able to teach others also. You know, becoming a teacher is not a function of whether or not you're a Christian. Just because you're a Christian doesn't mean that you've prepared yourself to teach. Those are two different things. And Paul says, commit this word to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So, how do we prepare ourselves to teach?
Study.
I'm sorry?
Study.
Okay. Study. There's absolutely value to the idea that we study, and I didn't bring my glasses up here, so I'm kind of relying on what I have on the screen up here to be big enough that I can read it. I want to skip ahead. You guys kind of came up with some ideas, so I want to be looking at a particular statement. Let's see. Well, we'll just do Hebrews 5 at verse 12, beginning. He says, let no man, this is not Hebrews 5 at verse 12. This is a statement that he makes to Timothy. I think it's 2 Timothy. He says, let no man despise thy youth, but be an example of them that believe in word, in manner of life, in love, in faith, in purity. So you're going to have to be a person who knows the word. There's no question about that. We have to study. But just study, it doesn't really prepare us to teach. Okay? Just knowing biblical information doesn't quite prepare us to preach or to teach. What else do we need to know? Yeah, Bill.
I can't say where it's at or exactly worded, but there is scripture to divide or write the word of truth.
Right.
If we're going to teach, we must be able to do that.
This is 2 Timothy 2, verses 14 and 15. Is this the passage that you're thinking about? I think it probably is. He says, of these things, put them in remembrance, charging them in the sight of the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, to the subverting of them that hear. Give diligence to present thyself unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, handling aright the word of truth. There are a number of people who are great debaters. Can't teach a lick, but they're great debaters. They can go on and on and on arguing with someone about the most minute idea. They could argue that Paul went to Spain or Paul didn't go to Spain. We talked about that a little bit this morning. And they would argue, well, he said this in Philemon, the 22nd verse, and he said this in Romans 15. And they can go on and on and on, almost endlessly about that. Can't teach a lick. They're very good students. And they know a lot about what the Bible says. I actually, when I was in college, I took a class from a man who could quote most of the New Testament. Didn't believe any of it, but he could quote it. He studied it. More to teaching than studying. Yeah, Manny.
There's a difference between studying and learning.
Okay.
And I think that's the difference. Because when you study something, I can know it, but I haven't learned it because I haven't learned to apply it. And that's being able to handle rightly the word of truth. A great debater, someone can take, like you said, the most mundane fact, and they can spin it with all these other facts that they've learned, and they can change that statement. But the reality is, if they have learned it and applied the truth, then they're handling it right, and they understand how to apply it to those that they're teaching. When I'm going to teach a class, I make sure that I think through the possible questions that my students might have so that I have the answer and I can show application for that so that they can start to own that information that I'm giving them. It's the same thing when we're evangelizing and we're teaching about God's truth. If we haven't learned it ourselves and applied it ourselves, and handled it in our lives, we just study.
Yeah.
We don't understand how to apply that information.
And we can get hung up on words. You know, when I was much younger and I was preaching in Brookings, somebody called me Pastor Dean. And I was mentioned in the newspaper as preaching a wedding, and they called me Reverend Cruz. And I went ballistic. You know, I'm not a reverend. But I went wild. I didn't do any good. I probably should have just let that go, and we'll talk about that later. But I went ballistic. That's striving about words to no profit. Yeah, babe. Dot Kim. Striving about words right there.
Well, your question about how to become a teacher or why. But you said on the screen it says preparing to teach. I think we have to make a determination that we want to be a Timothy. Paul could not have mentored Timothy unless Timothy wanted to be mentored. Unless Timothy wanted to carry this work forward. And when you look at the pastoral letters that Titus and Timothy, and you look at the way Paul is instructing them, they obviously have prepared themselves to be recipients of this information and be willing to carry it forward. So I think there has to be a willingness to, and you know what? I think, yes, of course, studying and knowing the Bible is critical, but to tell the Jesus story and to tell your story and how you came to Jesus, that's actually pretty simple. And you just kind of have to figure out how you want to present that to people. And so you present that to people and hopefully it will open doors. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But we have to determine in our hearts that we want to be a Timothy and we want to learn how to do this. And so the way to do that, in my estimation and in my life has played out, is find someone who can mentor you. Find someone that you respect or you feel like is a good teacher. And ask them, just point blank ask them, will you be my mentor? Will you help me learn how to do this? And it's actually, that's the way to do it. And go to Bible classes with them. Be their assistant, if you will. Or just be a student. And just and take notes on not only what's presented, but how it's being presented. And then opportunities will open up. And that's the other thing is we have to pray for opportunities.
Yeah.
Because I think if we keep asking God to send seekers, he will do it. I've seen that over and over and over again. And I think that that's important is we have to make ourselves available for that. And not only available, but seek the opportunity for that and ask God to provide it.
Good point. Good point. And you just kind of along that line, did you ever take a class when you were in high school, particularly high school, college, and the guy was really smart that was teaching the class, obviously knew a lot about the subject, couldn't teach it at all. In fact, just made you confused when you listened to him. I took classes like that, you know. Yeah, Carol.
When the gospel first went out, it was the hot news. And you think about the fact that they had that advantage. But the advantage was that somebody would look at you. They wanted to know the news. But you still had to do exactly what we have to do. You have to show the person the benefit of what it did for your life, the benefit that can do for their life, not for yours, but you're able to pique their interest with a need that you see that they have and how Christ and God's gift will fill that and help them live out their life here on earth and live eternally.
Okay. Let me pick up something that the apostle said in 1 Corinthians 6 and I or 1 Corinthians 9 and I think it kind of addresses what you're talking about. He said, though I was free from all men, I brought myself under bondage to all that I might gain the more. To the Jews, I became as a Jew that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, not being myself under the law, but that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, as without law, not being without law to God, but under law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak I became weak, that I might gain the weak. I became all things to all men so that I might save some. And I think Paul understood how important it was to meet people where they are. And that argues against having a set progression that you're going to go through with everybody that you teach. You have to listen to what they say. Yeah, Kim.
I was going to say, I think there's so much value in telling your story and then looking at the stories of conversion in the Bible. Rather than talk about what they need, let them apply that and then say, here's what I need. So when I'm teaching someone, and when I get to a certain point where I can kind of tell that they're responding to this, I'll say, is this something you want in your life? Is this something that you're thinking about? And because we've led up to that, often they will, most of the time, yeah, I want that. Now I don't know how to get it. Okay, well, let me share with you how people got it in the New Testament. I'll tell you how they got it. And then you can decide if this is something for you in your life. So I don't try to tell people what they're doing wrong and how they can fix it. I let them come to that realization. If I just passionately tell my story and then passionately tell Jesus' story, they will come to the realization that there's something missing in their life.
Yeah, most of the time people don't need to be told that they're wrong. They already know that what they're doing is not working. So just let them decide what they're doing is not working. You don't need to tell them that what they're doing is not working. They already know that. What they need is how to respond to that. Yeah, Bill.
Speaking as someone who knows what it is to be argumentative, if we're teaching someone or trying to help them, we need to be able to lead them to a better place and not win an argument. Winning an argument doesn't win anyone's soul. Leading somebody to a better place does.
That's true. That's true. And I think this is what, this may be what Paul is talking about in Hebrews 5. And finally, I'm going to read Hebrews 5. I thought I was before. Hebrews 5, by reason of time, you ought to be teachers. You have need that someone teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, to become such as have need of milk, not of solid food. Everyone that partakes of milk is without experience in the word of righteousness. Doesn't say he doesn't know what it says. It says he's without experience. He's a baby. Solid food is for full-grown men, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern good and evil. You got to live it. And to Bill's point, you rarely convert someone by winning an argument. He that's converted against his will remains unconverted. And trust me, I understand winning arguments. I was all about that when I was in college and when I was a debater. I could win the argument. I didn't want to just win the argument. I wanted to leave you bloody and bleeding in the gutter and stomp on you. That doesn't get it. I can tell you, you can't raise your kids that way. You can't have a relationship with your wife that way. And goodness only knows, I've tried. It won't work. Winning an argument doesn't convert people. It's showing them this will improve your life. So I think it's important. Well, we could talk about this for a long time. This is what he said to Timothy. Let no one despise your youth. It's not a function of age. It's a function of knowing that this made a difference in your life. Oh, so we're going to, you know, Kim and I are talking about having some time when people could come to the house and we can introduce you to the way that we teach. Understand, that's not the way. We're not telling you. You have to teach the way we teach. We're just telling you something that worked for us. And it's mostly just self-guided Bible study, letting people read the Bible for themselves. You're not telling them what it says. So we'll be talking about that more as we talk about preparing ourselves to teach. And it is a daunting responsibility to think that you're going to be a teacher. You know, I taught classes that prepared people to take tests so that they could obtain a professional license. And it is in a sense, that's like facing judgment. Not the same, but it's like facing judgment. I had to teach them the right stuff. If I teach them the wrong stuff, when they get to the time that they take the test, they're going to fail. And they won't get their license. So I have to teach them the right stuff. And I have to teach it in the right way. Okay? So we'll continue to think about how we can teach. How do we prepare ourselves to do that?